Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm honored today to have as my guest T. Jefferson Parker. From now on, I will refer to him as Jeff. We'll be discussing The Fallen, which has recently been published by William Morrow, currently available in your bookstores. And by way of introduction, Mr. Parker won the Edgar Award for his novel California Girl in 2005, and also for Silent Joe in 2002. Were the years he won the award. So first of all, Jeff, congratulations on winning two Edgars.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And having read The Fallen, I think that there's probably a decent chance that the third might be in the offering.
Well, that'd be an awful lot to hope for, but, never know, I guess.
Yeah. Jeff, let's go back for a moment. I discovered your writing in 1985 when I read Laguna Heat.
Wow. Yeah, you're an old guy, just like me.
Yeah, exactly. I'm dating myself a little bit there, aren't I? And, you know, I love first sentences of novels. My favorite is The Last Good Kiss by James Crumley. But with Laguna Heat, you start out with a perfect morning in a city of perfect mornings. An artist would have worked, a god would have rested. And I read on your website where when you wrote that sentence, you really felt like you were kind of finding your voice as a writer.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, that's interesting you'd point that out, because I worked a long, long, long time to get that first sentence. I worked on that first book, Laguna Heat, for 5 or 6 years, Casey. I wrote it 5 complete times. I wrote like a lot of early writers, I was copying my heroes, you know. I wrote a draft of Laguna Heat that was bad Hemingway, and I wrote a draft that was bad Jim Harrison, and I wrote a draft that was bad, you know, Jorge Luis Borges, and I wrote a draft that was bad Raymond Chandler. And after five full drafts, I finally sat down. I said, "Look, kid, you got to quit doing this. You know, you can't write like your heroes. You got to write like yourself. Make this book yours from A to Z. And it may not be a good book, but at least it'll be your book." And I sat down and I go, okay, I'm going to write a first sentence that I like, and I'm going to try to then metastasize, if you will, that first sentence on inward into the 300, 500 pages to follow, and try to make it my own voice. And so I worked hard on that first sentence. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, and your heroes are probably the type of heroes that I don't like to classify writers as genre writers, and I think you've broken out of that. But probably a lot of people that write what would be considered mysteries or thrillers, Jim Harrison and Garcia Marquez and Borges, those are probably not a lot of the readers that or writers that a traditional mystery writer would read.
No, probably not. You know, I grew up as a kind of a curious, wide reader, not a bookworm, but just kind of curious about all kinds of writing. And when I got into college, I became an English major kind of by default, because I loved reading literature so much and writing essays about what I'd written. And so I really came up with kind of a literary, if you will, or kind of highbrow list of people who I've looked up to as a writer over the years. And you know, typically they're not what you'd find on most mystery writers' bookshelves, perhaps. Although I think a lot of us probably, you know, sort of cut our teeth on the loftier things and then settled into more genre-like work as professionals, because we were comfortable there and did well there, and it paid the bills.
Mm-hmm. Now, The Fallen, which, as I mentioned, has just been published by William Morrow. Mm-hmm. The protagonist is Robbie Brownlaw, who's a homicide detective for the city of San Diego. And as the novel develops, we find out that 3 years earlier, he had been thrown from the 6th floor of a downtown hotel in San Diego. And he experienced synesthesia, if I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
And which is a neurological condition. And if you would, Jeff, explain to the listeners a bit about what synesthesia is, because when I first started reading this, I've got to be honest, I said, where is he going to go with this? This is a very difficult thing to write about.
Yeah, it's kind of an odd thing. It was synesthesia, just exactly what you said. It's a neurological condition. Typically, you are born with it, although in the case of my hero, it's caused by a traumatic head injury. But synesthesia means, in the Greek, a mixing of the senses. And the most common form of synesthesia, a lot of people have it, the most common form is that synesthetes see numbers and letters on the page as having colors. And each one will have a discrete and unique and consistent color. For instance, the numeral 9 might always be sky blue to a person. And the letter M will always be olive drab. And they see colors and letters and numbers in terms of colors. Also, a common synesthetic thing is the experiencing of sound as not only sound, but seeing colored shapes that correlate with certain sounds, certain chords, if you will. Jimi Hendrix was a synesthete, and he liked to refer to, I think it was B flat minor, as his purple chord. And because every time he played it, he saw the color purples in certain shapes, and that chord then became part of the song Purple Haze that he wrote. So synesthetes have transposed sensual experiences that are often also, interestingly enough, associated with hallucinogenic drugs and with some other disease. I can't remember it now, but there's a disease that will cause you to have these sort of trans-sensual experiences.
Mm-hmm. And some other famous artists have had synesthesia as well.
Yeah, they have. You see that a lot in composers. Rimsky-Korsakov was believed to be a synesthete. The painter David Hockney has claimed synesthesia. There was a funny incident between French poets. I can't remember who it was, Baudelaire and Rimbaud, I think, one wanting to have synesthesia because the other claimed to have it, and being disappointed that he himself did not have it, kind of I wish I was kind of thing between these poets, which I thought was kind of funny. But they say that it's one in 10,000 people actually have it, and a lot of the people who have synesthesia don't really understand what it is and don't really talk about it or admit it. They don't know what to call it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's very interesting because, and I'm glad to hear you say that about Jimi Hendrix, because when you listen to Purple Haze, you realize that there's something going on there with Hendrix, and I actually have experienced that song in different states of consciousness. So, but I've always known there was something about that song that just really resonated with me as a listener.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's part of that indefinable kind of uniqueness or whatever you would say about that song. It doesn't really sound like other things. Maybe that's part of why.
Mm-hmm. Now, The Fallen, one of the things that I liked, Jeff, about this is that it's a well-developed intricate plot, which I think the last three novels have all been, and I've just really enjoyed them. And you really focus a lot on the city of San Diego, and you get into the ethics authority they have there, and you get into the bond ratings that go on. And for the listeners out there that might not be as familiar with this, a city's bond rating is very critical. And if you would tell us a little bit about some of the research you did for San Diego, because San Diego is known as a city which, I mean, it's this gorgeous city that where the weather's perfect, but they have a lot of problems out there, don't they?
Yeah, we do. We do, Casey. The research on that aspect of The Fallen was really fairly easy because I subscribe to the San Diego Union Tribune here, like most of us do who live in the San Diego area, and there for a 2-year period between 2003 and 2005, say, when I was working on this book, you couldn't escape it. I mean, it was the front page was always the scandals about the bond rating and the councilmen who had taken bribes to loosen the no touch laws in strip clubs for money, so these councilmen could line their coffers with strip joint owners' money. all sorts of things, scandals about the ballpark that was finally built, and San Diego was just having a lot of troubles at that time. So the bond rating that you're talking about is really important to a city. They issue bonds. It's a way of borrowing money, if you will, and the shakier the city is perceived as being by the people in New York who rate cities, you know, Moody's and Standard & Poor's and all, the more expensive it becomes for a city to borrow money, and it can really wreak that kind of expense can really wreak havoc with an economy. And San Diego's economy, their budget right now is really bad. We haven't recovered yet. We're still kind of in the thick of things down here, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Robbie Brownlaw's partner is Mackenzie Cortez, who is a character that I really liked, and she becomes involved with Hollis Harris, and he has some pretty amazing technology that he has developed. And if you would talk a little bit about the technology that this Hollis Harris has come up with, and how you use that when you were writing The Fallen.
Well, that stuff from Hollis Harris is generally described under the threat assessment headline. That's what it is. It's threat assessment that he does. There's a place here in San Diego, up north of here a little bit, between La Jolla and the freeway, that's called Spook Valley, because there's a lot of black programs, a lot of CIA sponsored stuff, a lot of kind of high level informational digital, you know, stuff going on in Spook Valley. These researchers and these companies that are building things, often for the military. And so anyway, in the book, Hollis Harris is a Spook Valley threat assessment guru, genius, and he's developed this combination of software and hardware that will enable law enforcement, will enable his buyer, his end user, whoever that may be, to access in real time vast databases from widely disparate agencies and organizations instantly together in a way that you can't do right now. You know, we have these huge databases, but they don't talk to each other. Sort of analogous to how the FBI and the CIA never get along. We have these giant databases that have great stuff. For instance, you know, we have an immigration database down here in San Diego, and we've also got one for the sheriffs and for the cops and for 15 other federal agencies and a whole bunch of crossover agencies, but they don't talk to each other. And one of the things that Hollis Harris manages to do in the book is to get a way to get all of those databases speaking together to the end user instantly, so that when a person, say, you know, enters a thumbprint or a name or whatever identifier you have of this person, you can suddenly learn about that person in 3 to 4 to 5 degrees of separation instantly. You can find out who they're related to, what drugs they've been taking, what their buying habits are, their criminal record, where they live. I mean, you name it. You can find out a ton of stuff. And so Hollis Harris has developed this stuff, and the city of San Diego is thinking of buying some.
Okay. Yeah, I find that whole concept fascinating.
Me too.
And frightening at the same time. I don't know if I want to see my file or not.
Yeah, you know, one time I read a newspaper article. It was published down here in San Diego. This was 3 or 4 years ago, but it was an article about all the different databases that I was just talking about, the different organizations that have different databases right here that are applicable to San Diego. And there was, you wouldn't believe, like there were just literally, Casey, dozens of them, and there was so much information that wasn't, you know, it couldn't talk to you. You couldn't get it all, you know, at the same time, and yet there was so much of it out there, and it was amazing to read about all these, you know, all these agencies and all these departments and all these different organizations that had this information, but nobody quite had figured out how to pull it all together and use it. And the what had led to the article, I think, was the fact that who was it? I think it was one of the 9/11 hijackers, if I remember right. Don't quote me on this, but I think it was one of the 9/11 hijackers who was actually picked up down here in San Diego, and interviewed and let go. And if they had had the information at that time that they had a couple years later when they knew this guy and looked into him, they would have seen that something was very, very amiss there and something terrible was going to happen, but they didn't quite they have the information at hand and they let the guy go. So mm-hmm. that was kind of the idea between Hollis Harris, is he's the guy who can keep that from happening.
Mm-hmm. Now, it seems to me, Jeff, that The Fallen is a novel of love, loss, forgiveness, acceptance, and the relationships that the protagonists are going through are very, in some cases, very painful. Garrett Esplanda, I don't know if I'm pronouncing the last name right.
Yeah.
And has had a daughter who was drowned and is separated from his wife, Stella. And I really like the way it's almost kind of like a symphony, the relationships that the people were going through. None of them were easy, but everybody seemed to be trying really hard to try to find love in this crazy world we live in.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know, that's interesting you point that out, Casey, as being kind of like a symphony or something, because I didn't realize that those relationships in the book were kind of working together symbiotically, if you will, until I'd pretty much written it. And I looked at it, I go, oh, now I see, I see the parallels between Garrett's romantic obsession with his wife, and with, you know, Robbie's decomposing marriage is a shadow or a parallel of that. And it all does kind of work together. It's about, it's about loss. You know, it's an anti-romance in a lot of ways. It's about people. It's about some people being able to retain love in spite of what happens to them, and other people not being able to retain love in spite of all their greatest efforts. And it's all about that.
Mm-hmm. And the way the last chapter of the book, I really liked how you kind of brought everyone, you kind of gave us kind of an overview of where a lot of different people were. And when I finished the book, I was kind of wondering if this is the end for these characters, or if you're thinking that perhaps the characters that appear in The Fallen, if they might appear again, or if you feel like this was the novel you wanted to write and you're done with them.
Yeah, I think the latter. I think that's the novel I wanted to write, and I think I'll probably let that novel just stand alone. I've written a novel since, believe it or not. I've got another one about done, and it's not related to these characters at all. I kind of like the idea of giving characters and a story and my readers, the very best possible shot I can, and withholding nothing from the book and nothing from the characters because I have to write about them again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll probably just leave these guys where they are.
Good. The Mercy Rayburn series,
mm-hmm.
Which started with Blue Hour, then Red Light, then Black Water.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful novels.
Thank you.
And I understand in the first novel that one of the characters, Hess, was based on your father.
Yeah, very, very much so. Hess is a good older guy, kind of coming to the end of his professional days, and he's suffering from a nasty lung cancer that he probably brought on himself by smoking for too long, all of which were true of my father at the time I was writing that book. So it's kind of a loosely disguised, love letter to my dad, who I'm happy to say, beat his cancer and is doing just fine now as we speak. But I saw a lot of my dad and Hess. They both seem to come from that generation that so closely equated their personality with their work, and their sense of self value with what they perceived as their value to society. There's a line in that book in which Hess just remarked that Hess just wanted to be necessary or something like that, something to that effect. And I see that in my dad. He wants to be useful and a part of the world. And when you retire, then you get all these. You don't have that anymore, and that's kind of what Hess is going through.
Mm-hmm. Now, will we see Mercy Rayburn again in the future?
I don't know. You know, Casey, I really liked the way I left her at the end of Blackwater. I thought she'd been through a lot and had solved a big case that meant something to her, and found out a little bit about her own heart and that of the guy Paul, whom she's sort of secretly been in love with for a year or so, and I'm kind of liking where she's where she's at right now. So I don't think I'll go back there. But maybe you got to hold it open, you know.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things, Jeff, that I really admire about your writing, because so many writers, particularly in the mystery genre, if they get a successful series, there's something seductive about staying with it, and there are a lot of reasons why writers do that. One of them obviously would be financial, but one of the writers who I've always respected, Elmore Leonard, has never really, you know, he could have gone with series characters, and he does have recurring characters, but mm-hmm. I really admire you coming up with standalone novels each time. I think it takes a lot of courage as a writer to do that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I do feel lucky to be able to do it. I've been really lucky to have publishers who will stick by me and not try to shoehorn me into a series or too deeply into a genre, and so I've been lucky. I've been real fortunate.
And Jeff, and again, we've been discussing The Fallen, published by William Morrow, a wonderful read. I strongly recommend it. And Jeff, I'm wondering, looking back over the last few years, in 2001 you write Silent Joe, which is just a wonderful novel about a character who has been adopted into a family, is badly scarred, again, finds out it's a very, very much a family drama, which won the Edgar. And then California Girl, which you published in 2004 and won the Edgar for last year, just captured California perfectly in the 60s. When you look at this, do you feel as a writer that something happened where you made this quantum leap to now you're winning Edgars versus where you were before, or do you think this is just the progression of your craft as a writer?
You know, my last few books have been better than my first few books. I think I'm getting better as a writer. I'm proud to say, because it keeps me challenged. You know, I want to be. I want each book out to be better than the one before. I know that you can't do that, you know, indefinitely. If you write enough books, one is probably not going to be as good as the others. But I'm always trying to get better. And I don't know if it was a quantum leap, but I do feel that with Silent Joe, there was some kind of an upping of the ante a little bit, I guess. And I think that I do think the latter books are just a little better than the older ones. You know, it's been hard to find my way through the, you know, through the maze of the genre and kind of really what you want to say and how much you want to partake in those conventions and how much you want to try to oppose them or break them or ignore them or whatever. So, you know, it's a slow burn, and that's one of the things I like about writing as opposed to being a tennis pro or something. You know, I wasn't burned out when I was 25 or 30. I was just getting going when I was 30, and I'm 52 now, and I feel like I'm on top of my game. I just finished up a book a couple months ago that I think is the best thing I've done, and I can't wait to get it out there for you guys to read.
Oh, that's great. I can't wait to read it.
All right.
And Jeff, in conclusion, I'd like to just discuss fly fishing for a moment with you, because it's an important part of The Fallen, and it seems like something you've taken an interest in. And when you mentioned Tom McGuane and Jim Harrison, those are two avid fly fishermen, and Russell Chatham, the wonderful artist. And is fly fishing something that you've come to here recently, or is it something that a passion you've had for a long time?
You know, it's kind of weird. It's odd you should ask that. Remember that funny quote about that's often quoted from the Hemingway book about how did you go broke? And he says, it's something like gradually and then all at once.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Well, that's how I came to fly fishing. It's just, you know, my wife, my first wife, way back in 1990, bought me a fly fishing rod because my friend Paul was fly fishing and thought that I would enjoy the sport. And I got that rod and reel and went a time or two, and, you know, I thought it was fun, but it didn't do much for me. And then I went a couple other times, and I thought it was fun, but I just went because the guys were going. And then about 5 years ago, just something clicked in my head, and then this obsessive kind of pleasure began to come over me with regard to fly fishing. And since then, it's just gotten worse. You know, I can't walk by a fountain in a pool or a fountain in a mall without wondering if there's trout in there that I can cast to. You know, I can't strip off a piece of dental floss to clean my teeth with at night without thinking of, you know, the double haul on my casting and how it can be improved, you know. And it's just sort of this funny, obsessive thing, and I genuinely love it. I think if I had a good river within walking distance of my house, I'd probably never write another book, and that's not a good thing.
Well, that might explain too why some of writers move to Montana.
And
hang out there so that they can do their fly fishing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for your generous time today.
Well, thank you, Casey. I appreciate it.
And I really like The Fallen, and if you're as excited as you are about the next novel, I can't wait to have you back on, and I'm sure Maggie will get me a copy when it comes out. So for the time being, we'll satisfy ourselves with The Fallen, with California Girl and Silent Joe, and good luck with The Fallen. I think it's going to do very well for you.
Well, thanks a ton. I hope you're right, and I really appreciate your interest and your questions at all, and we'll get you a copy of the next book down the road when you're ready for it.
Great. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
All right, Casey.